Time to have East Jewels, Blue Skies over West London. Three-way title race in the Premier League. Yes. What could be better? What better? Well, better. No. There are a few things that would be better, but yeah. This one's okay. This one's okay. Good. We ain't complaining. Arsenal winning. We're going to get to that in a minute. We'll also be getting to the various cup semifinals in France and Germany and in Italy. Yeah. But let's start. Manchester City against Aston Villa. Both teams, I think, with a lot at stake. Obviously, City with the title. Villa for the top four finish. Villa, six changes from the weekend. From what I could tell, almost all of them enforced.
Yeah, loads of players missing.
And when I first saw this, I asked myself, wait, is Emery tanking? And then I saw, no, actually, all these people are out. So I wouldn't put it beyond Emery to schedule a loss.
Yes.
Right?
That's true.
But this is not what he did. And in fact, in the first half, I thought Villa played reasonably well until that free kick.
Yeah, until the free kick. I mean, they scored a really good goal by John Duran. They were, I thought, threatening on transitions. And even Guardiola after the game said, like, there were too many transitions for them for my liking. We lost the ball in cheap ways, in too many dangerous areas that then led to the transitions. And he was not too happy with that. It's just the second half, and you kind of knew that as soon as the pressure would be stronger from City, maybe score the second goal, and then there would be no way back for them. And it was not bad from Villa, and at times it was very good from City, maybe not overall, because again, they looked a bit vulnerable in transitions, but it's still a very good win. And to be fair, Olsen made some really good saves. It could have been far more than just 4-1.
Yeah, Olsen, another stand-in, of course. Emi Martinez bowing out. We burying the lead a little bit, but were you surprised that this was a match? And we knew Arteta, we knew Pep was going to rotate to some degree. He couldn't rotate at the back because he was basically down to four fit defenders, counting Rico Lewis. But he chose to leave out Erling Haaland and Kevin De Bruyne. And now, looking at the schedule, it makes sense. You have Real Madrid coming up. You're in a title race. You're at home. I still thought it was a pretty big call to make because Villa are not a pushover.
No, I agree. I mean, Villa are not the same away from home than they are
of course
at Villa Park. So for sure that and this season, well, I think since Kevin De Bruyne has come back, clearly this team is, when he's on form, he's very important to this team. So if you take out both Haaland and De Bruyne, arguably, they may be your two most important players or best players. Okay, Foden is maybe the most informed one, but you would say that De Bruyne and Haaland are your two best players, right?
Jules would say Rodri has got to be. It's a top three, of course they're not. I take your point.
So it is a big call to make. Yeah, massive call.
Especially after, you know, Haaland criticized at the weekend for the way he played.
Yeah.
On the flip side, though, of course you're going to rotate your wingers because, you know, they came on at the weekend. And so at that point, I think, and this takes us to Foden, I want Foden in my lineup. Mm. So I'm still going to find a home for Foden. I'm a fan of Foden through the middle. I've said it. I'm not one of those people who thinks he can only play wide. And
He can't play wide. I mean, wide is not his position. I think I don't understand whoever right now would say that he's better wide than centrally.
A lot of people say, well, but he comes
in. Gareth Southgate did, but we know what Gareth
Southgate did. All right. That was a hat-trick. Beyond the hat-trick, I thought that was pretty emphatic. He's past the 20-goal mark this season. You know, it's not like he plays every minute of every game, which makes it even more impressive, I think. He's right on the cusp of turning that maybe big three into a big four, would you agree?
But he has to play centrally. It's as simple as that. And we've said it many times before. And if you look at, okay, between the two hat-tricks, the Brentford one away and the one from last night, the Villa one, if you look at just those games, because before KDB was out, so it's not the same analysis. But since KDB has been back, and between those two hat-tricks, he scored two goals against United, and he scores there and there. But the games where he hadn't assisted or scored, when was he was playing wide. So either KDB was central and Foden wide, or Alvarez was central and Foden wide, or both Alvarez and De Bruyne started. So the Liverpool game, the other Brentford game, the Chelsea game, the Everton game, he played wide. And of course, he's still a very good player, so he can play wide, but he will never have the same impact. Which leads me to the next point. do you play both De Bruyne and Foden until the end of the season, to, and you sacrifice Foden wide because KDB can definitely not play wide? Do you at some point say to KDB, listen, you're great, but you're 32, you're not the future here, he is the future. You know, at some point, whether it's this summer or the following summer, KDB is going to go. Is going to be gone.
I'm a believer in the power of now. And I think now is still Kevin De Bruyne. You don't sacrifice anything.
Well, you play De Bruyne,
what is at his best? Well, it's fine. You sacrifice Foden wide to give you
I'm
more.
I'm not so sure.
You can also think about playing Foden and KDB central in certain situations as well.
You need Bernardo there.
Play Bernardo wide. He's done it before, right?
You need Bernardo next to Rodri, especially if you don't have Stones. In the build-up play, you can't have Foden and De Bruyne.
I want to keep going a little bit more with this. With this Foden thing, and I'm just going to correct me if I'm wrong. Your argument is that unless Stones is fully fit and capable of stepping into the midfield from the back, you know, essentially making it that 3-2-4-1 that we've seen, and that has worked so well for them, alongside Rodri. If he's not there, then Bernardo Silva is really the only person who you would trust to do that, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. Kovacic, Mateus Nunez, those guys.
I don't even need to just watch how many games they've played. Right. Simple as that.
So the idea of a 4-1-4-1, let's say, with Rico Lewis stepping into midfield, for example, which he's done before, which he did last night, and Foden with De Bruyne. You don't think that that's sustainable?
No. I mean, no, on some games it can. So
I guess what I'm driving at is it's something I would like to see in certain games against certain opponents. Yeah, obviously it depends who you're playing as well, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know that I need three center backs plus Stones plus Rodri, much as I appreciate that then Rodri comes forward more. I think you can get away with more of a passer playmaker. And it can be Bernardo Silva, as we've seen, if Stones isn't there. But I like the idea. I like the idea of maybe De Bruyne dropping a little and passing from deeper in certain situations. I wonder what would happen if Foden tried doing that. I think you're at the stage where you need to figure out what you have in Foden.
I think it's too late this season to try anything. And Pep would have done it already if he thought it was going to work, especially against like smaller teams. And I think the fact that he hasn't done it, it's not now in the final sprint of the season when you will have Real Madrid in the Champions League, plus the league game that you have to win. You have to win all of them, really. So, yeah, maybe in some games you can do it. I think it was very interesting yesterday to see the setup and the fact that De Bruyne was on the bench against a very low block because we knew Villa would play really deep, to have the two wingers this time. And you said, you know, he rotated the wingers. There was no wingers against Arsenal. It was Foden and Bernardo Silva who are not wingers. So the fact that he started with Grealish and Doku, really to have control for Grealish, that's how he played, whether you like it or not. It's a different player to the one he was at Villa, but that on one side and the one-on-one isolation on Doku on the other side to have all that pace and everything like we saw on the first goal, that was good. But then, in that setup, and Foden central behind a striker that can be Alvarez, it doesn't matter so much, then you need Bernardo with Rodri there. You can't have De Bruyne so deep. So De Bruyne yesterday, for example, De Bruyne Foden would not have worked yesterday. It would not have been possible.
No, you wouldn't do it against Villa the way they play.
So,
that wouldn't make sense.
When do you do it, Sheffield United and Luton? That's it.
No, I think there are other games where you can do it depending how they set up. Especially, I mean, even against another top opponent who maybe plays a different sort of block. Even against Arsenal. Look, I'm just chucking this out there, right? Obviously, you had Foden and Silva wide, and then he brought in Doku and Grealish, and it didn't quite work out maybe the way he
took Foden off.
The logic, I could understand what he was trying to do, why he did it that way, right? But even then, in certain games, what if you played Foden on the left, for example, right?
Well, we still against Arsenal. You played on the left,
but you play him on the left with different instructions, right? For example, putting in more crosses, even if it's crowded, you get a knockdown, something happens. I just think it can give you a level of variety.
Yeah, maybe.
And that's what I like. I mean, essentially, the last three games, Foden's played three different positions, right?
Yeah, but that's what, so we go back to my point. When KDB is in the team, the only way Foden will play is wide. So it's very simple. It's if you think that that's enough for Foden to play wide in those games, yeah, okay, no problem. If you think that you're losing out and you're missing out on what Foden is good at, then this is where the conversation is. So what? So then maybe you drop KDB for the Real Madrid game. But if you think that the you still get the best of KDB and kind of 50% of the best of Foden wide, then you play them both. But if you said if you think that it's better to get the 100% best of Foden, then that has to be central. So this is calls that Guardiola will have to make. You know, did he really drop De Bruyne to the bench yesterday to rest him? I mean, the guy didn't play for 6 months. Did he bench him yesterday because he thought, I need Foden in a game like this, central, not KDB, not against a deep block, not against a low block like that, not without Haaland because Haaland needed a rest or something? I don't know. I'm really curious to see. And then I don't think we'll see this weekend because I expect everybody to play Foden wide, KDB central, Haaland would be there.
This weekend we think he's going to play the same 11 that is going to play Real Madrid, yeah?
You would think so, yeah.
Except maybe for injured guys coming back.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's a good debate, I think. It's a really interesting debate. Because there's no doubt, just before you go, Gab, sorry, that Foden is the successor to... So whenever KDB goes this summer, the following one, it won't be further than that. So it's either he's got this 2 months left or another season, and after that, he'd be almost 34, he'd be gone. And Foden is definitely the successor for KDB. Centrally, he will be the number 10 of that team for the next 10 years. It's just what do you do in between now and when KDB leaves?
It's a little bit like, there's a parallel with Rodri and Fernandinho, for example, right? Where Rodri was brought in, played with Fernandinho for maybe it's 2 years, if I'm not mistaken, maybe mm-hmm. even longer, right? Where you kind of had the transition, where Fernandinho was a player who Pep loved, was so important for him, obviously was getting older, and sometimes you saw them together. Sometimes, you know, the transition coming was obvious, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a little different because De Bruyne will inevitably have the injury and durability issues that Fernandinho didn't have. Obviously, when Fernandinho, it's not like Fernandinho never got hurt, but when he got hurt,
yeah,
he'd be out for, you know. So I'm not 100% on that. I'm not sure Foden... It's not just that Foden doesn't have KDB's range of passing. Foden's a very good passer, but he's a different type of passer at this stage of his career. And again, we're judging him because when we see him pass, when he comes in from wide areas, you know, he's passing the ball when he's on the move and stuff. And you're just in a way that's different from De Bruyne.
Yeah.
And also, just to remind everybody, younger listeners out there, you go and watch some YouTube of De Bruyne 7 or 8 years ago, you will see him taking players on, skipping past them, the footwork and everything, in a way that's actually quite similar to Foden. So, I don't know. It's fascinating. It's a great great situation to be in. A word on Haaland. Don absolutely ripped him a new one on Monday when we reviewed the show. And his take was basically that he's... Obviously, he prefers his left foot, right? I don't think that's a mystery, right? And he said he needs to... He was just very... I thought he was maybe a little hard on him in terms of... We saw the horrendous miss and everything. Is that the case, or do we think, actually... You know what? If you're confident with your left foot, I don't necessarily have a problem with you, you know, pushing that.
So Don was like, his right foot is not good enough. Is that what he said?
Yeah. And so that's why, for example, when he completely whiffed on the ball at the far post and so on, and he's so used to doing that move where, there's space behind, which obviously there wasn't in the Arsenal game, and he spins off the defender and takes it on his left, and that's how he scores a lot of his goals. I mean, Don didn't go full Roy Keane on him and say, oh, he's a League Two striker, or he looks like almost like a League Two striker, whatever he said. Is this something that Pep is trying to play on with him by saying, like, all right, you just sit this one out, come back at the weekend, play, and be ready for Real Madrid? Is he playing some psychology, or does he just say, like, I want to get Alvarez minutes as well?
Yeah, no, I think it was maybe a bit of everything. But it depends. So Haaland should be better in...
everything.
No, but everything outside of scoring, because, scoring, yeah, of course, you can always improve, but... You can't tell me that he's not a great finisher. This is not true. Even if he misses a few chances, his XG this season, he scored 18 goals, his XG is 21 in the league. So it's not that bad. Yeah, okay, right. There's three missing somewhere.
Right.
It's not that bad, right? Should he be better in the builder play, holding the ball up, taking part in... Yeah, of course. Could he improve technically? 100% on his first touch, on his passing. There's obviously this rondo that is going around now in social media where you see him a bit clumsy compared to the others with the ball. But this is not new. I remember we had a discussion. I remember very vividly a Bournemouth game where he took the ball on the edge of the box and to turn, on his left foot as well, to turn. It was just like... Yeah, no, it's not. So when people when people say to me, oh, between Mbappe and Haaland, Mbappe is a much better footballer all around than Erling Haaland is. Technically, just everything. But Haaland is this incredible force and finisher and all of that. But obviously, League Two is too far. And I think Roy Keane only meant that, you know, in a... being part of the game more. But remember last season when Pep said I would like him to touch the ball 50 times a game.
Okay, then right? Get him, then don't have
but that's,
him.
But that's never going to happen. This is not what he does. So he's like Trezeguet. When Trezeguet was playing, we had this debate in France so many times about Trezeguet. Trezeguet was only scoring goals. Nothing else. Not giving you anything else.
And just scoring 20 goals a season without penalties and free kicks. So.
But without touching the ball much outside of the box. Full stop. This is not the striker he was. You could not hold the ball up. You could not play with him. But he was not. That's not what he did.
The other thing, though, is it's not like these players go on the pitch and just express themselves doing what they do naturally. They also get instructions from managers, right? So going back, Trezeguet, when he was at Juventus, that's exactly what he was asked to do.
Yeah.
Now, if we want to talk about... Obviously, Haaland, I think, does a very good job with his movement, drawing players away and stuff like that, which is what you want. But he's not asked to drop the ball, to drop back in the midfield. He's not asked to, you know, have Ederson put the ball up, take it on his chest, hold the ball, and lay it off, right? It's not what he is asked to do. So to decide that, well, he can't do that. Well, he doesn't do that because that's not the way City play. It's also City have 65% possession. So a lot of times, it's not that often that they need to get the ball off the pitch and they play out from the back. So I find this discussion a little bit, you know, we just have to take into account what are his instructions.
Yeah, yeah.
The other point I would want to make about Erling Haaland and the way he looks and the Rondo video is just a fact. Smaller players in those situations are going to look more graceful and more technical. I know. Unless it's Zlatan, right? Yeah. Or Totti, who are the exceptions, right? But it doesn't mean that they're less technically gifted necessarily.
Yeah.
It just means they're going to, I mean, Thomas Muller looks like his limbs are going in all directions. I mean, he's not the greatest technically, right?
Yeah.
He brings other things to the table. But he's not bad technically, right?
I don't know.
But it's just, they look a certain way. We have to get past that and look, all right, do they actually produce? Does he control the ball when you get it to him? Or does he look good controlling the ball when you get it to him, right? Those are two different things.
Yeah.
A word on Villa. They're head-to-head with Spurs. You know my thoughts on Unai. It seems to me that there's like a split where he either has to be, you know, this tactical genius.
Yeah.
Or he's the weirdo. Objectively, when I look at the injuries that they've had this season, they've been hit really hard. I know other teams have been hit hard too, and you know I struggle to bring up injuries because then people are like when we talked about Liverpool's injuries, I had United fans be like, oh, look at all the injuries, United fans. That's fine. You've had injuries too, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Big deal. Luton had a ton of injuries, which nobody talked about because nobody's heard of these players, right? But this is pretty impressive what he's put together.
Yeah, I mean, it's also maybe the second half of the season is not as good as the first half, and it was never going to be because that first half was just exceptional, especially at Villa Park. And since the turn of the year, he hasn't been as good.
And it's because Boubacar Kamara is not there,
not
right?
Not just Boubacar Kamara, but I think the injuries, I think Europe as well is taking its toll, which is normal. When you lose John McGinn because he gets sent off for something, I mean,
so stupid.
Yeah, so there's a few things there. They're still fourth, which is an incredible achievement at this stage of the season with 8 games to go. They're 2 points clear of Spurs with the same goal difference. They played one more game. So if Spurs win their game in hand, Spurs go fourth and Villa will be fifth, just a point behind. United seems to be a decent gap behind, and United are not very good. We know that. Villa have been better this season than United. So even if they finish fifth and the fifth place qualify them for the Champions League.
Which we won't know yet about
that.
No,
we won't know yet.
We'll have a clear idea, I think, after these next quarterfinals.
It's possible. So that would be great. If they finish fifth and go into the Europa League, it's still very good. It's not, you know, it would be an amazing season still.
Although I think in some ways, if they finish fifth and go in the Europa League, and this is, I don't mean to scare you, Villa fans, but Villa have spent an enormous amount of money, right? Yeah. If they finish fifth, you may get in a situation where, because of profit sustainability rules, they're like, all right, we need to kind of work with what we have, slow down the pace of investment
yeah,
in the club.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we've seen in years past, Newcastle, for example, finishing fourth and then slipping down. You know, we've seen things like this happen. So I think it's critical to their development, I think, actually. Even though it's a tremendous feat.
To get Champions League.
To get Champions League this season. Final word, just to be fair, on Zaniolo. You'll remember in the Champions League a couple years ago, Cristiano Ronaldo getting absolutely slaughtered when he was in the wall. I can't remember if it was against Lyon or against Porto or which team upset Juve, right?
Yeah.
You remember the free kick?
Porto, I think, yeah.
And he turns.
Yeah.
Was Zaniolo, I mean, Alan Shearer, who, when he stood in the wall, I'm sure he would have happily taken it in his not sore, in his face or whatever. And, you know, for the team. Zaniolo, didn't he kind of turn? To be fair, the guy next to him, I think it was Konsa, also kind of turns as well.
Kind of ball then Konsa looks at him and says, like, what are you doing? Yeah. What are you doing?
Is this a big deal?
Yeah.
So then why put this guy in the wall? Should you not know your players well enough to know that, hey, maybe you're a flying winger with a long hair?
No player should. No player should.
Should what?
Dirk out or avoid the ball. No play. You can't.
Okay, but the
before the game,
humans.
You can't say he can't go in the wall because he's a wimp and he's going to turn his back or he's not going to be hit by the ball. You can't do that. And also, you need other players. The ones who go in the wall are the ones that are not marking, for example. Usually, you know, or usually. So you
You probably don't want Zaniolo marking either.
Yeah, either. I just think it was bad. The ball should never have gone through, and I think City would still have won even without that goal. But you just don't know. I thought it was bad. I'm not saying that because Italian, but I thought it was bad.
Does this mean Zaniolo, given something Cristiano did?
Yeah.
Does this mean Zaniolo's on track to Cristiano? No, just check. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough City. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Arsenal are top of the league, at least until Liverpool kick off in a few hours, as Arteta makes wholesale changes and they dispatch Luton Town 2-0. Jules, he made the right call.
Yeah, five changes, no Rice, no Saka, no Jorginho, for example. And they were good. They were clinical, let's put it that way. They were serious. They did the job. They were 2-0 up at halftime. Then they controlled the second half, not to concede, not to do too much, not to score a third. There was more rotation done in that second half in terms of substitution. So overall, a good night. And as we say, at this end of the season, it's just about winning.
They have eight games in 22 days. Yeah, exactly. But shout out to Luton as well. They have a ton of players out. Just don't know who they are.
Juventus beat Lazio 2-0 at home in the Coppa d'Italia. First leg semi-final. A bit of relief for Max Allegri, Gav, who's been under massive pressure. And why are the fans so divided in the stadium?
So, yeah, a bit of relief. I mean, the first half, I don't think, from Juve was great.
No.
But they came back. They're big guns. Got the business done in the second half. Fine. You're set up nicely for the final. If you're mean, you might point out, oh, look, Andrea Pirlo you know, actually had more points than Max and also won the Coppa Italia, and he got sacked, but then he didn't have this big, massive contract.
Yeah.
The thing with the fans is really, really interesting, because so at halftime it's 0-0. Most of the fans in the stadium, who are just kind of civilians, start booing Juve.
Yeah.
Juve's ultras start booing and chanting against their fellow fans who are booing the club, because the ultras code at Juve has said that they kind of decide, like, no, we're not going to boo Allegri or the team until the final whistle, if we need to.
Yeah, yeah.
And they usually need to. so there was this surreal situation where, you know, there were about 1,000 Lazio fans in there, and you had about, 4,000 ultras, who make a racket, obviously, against 30,000, 35,000, however many there were in the Juventus Stadium. It's never great to have a divided thing. I can understand both points of view here. I do kind of think the ultras have to realize they don't speak for the whole fan base.
Yes.
A late Dominic Calvert-Lewin penalty gives Everton a 1-1 draw away to Newcastle. Joel, there was a lot of stake for both clubs in this game.
Yeah. I mean, Everton, of course, in the fight against relegation and all of that. For Newcastle, after the West Ham win, incredible win, to keep that momentum, to try to bridge that gap with the European places. And I don't know how Newcastle didn't win that game. They had so many chances. Pickford, who was by far man of the match, made so many saves.
Sean Dyche still complained after the game.
Kept Everton is in. I mean, the penalty, even the penalty.
He's complaining about how long it took to give the penalty. He said it was obvious.
Oh, yeah, so obvious, yeah. I mean, good for them. I don't think these kind of performances will save Everton. I know, going to St. James's Park is not easy, blah, 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 all of that. But it was not good from Everton. Even if Dyche said the second half was a bit better, I didn't think it was, to be fair. So well done to them. They still somehow managed to get a point, and it's a big disappointment for Newcastle. Former Spanish FA president Luis Rubiales was arrested at the airport upon his return to Spain from the Dominican Republic. And El País also reports that investigators are looking at Gerard Piqué's bank account, Gab. The story began with that unwanted kiss.
Yeah, and it's spreading far and wide, Jules.
Yeah.
A couple of things here. So Rubiales, as you know, he was arrested. He was abroad. He came back. Whatever you think of him, he could have stayed abroad and gone on the run if you want. He came back. I think now that he knows what the charges are, he could face up to 2.5 years in prison, 1 year for sexual assault, which is the interpretation of the unwanted kiss on Jenny Hermoso after the World Cup final, and 1.5 years for bullying and obfuscating evidence and so on in the Spanish FA's inquiry afterwards, putting pressure on people, whatever. But I think the other thing, business with Gerard Piqué and the Spanish Super Cup in Saudi Arabia, that is the more serious charge here. There is an investigation. It's not been charged yet. They're looking at Gerard Piqué as well. Basically, Gerard Piqué, who was still a Barcelona player at the time, and who I gotta say, I really like as a person. I've had the privilege of spending time with him. However, his agency negotiated a deal with Saudi, and he got a commission on it while he was a Barcelona player. On top of that, the deal ensured that Barcelona or Real Madrid would earn more money if they reached the final than other clubs. So it's not a good look. It happened on Rubiales' watch. People are looking for evidence.
For
the
bribes,
bank accounts
maybe?
Are
for bribes
in
a, from Piqué to Rubiales. Yeah.
The accounts are in Andorra, which is obviously, it's, for those who don't know, it's a tiny country. It's near Barcelona, but it's not part of Spain. It's its own country, so there could be secrecy laws involved.
Yeah.
It's an ugly story. The only thing I would say about this is it shouldn't have taken a kiss
in
worldwide television for everybody to round on Rubiales, right?
Yeah.
If this stuff, all this other stuff happened, and there should have been an investigation before. Jules, we not done. More quick hits.
Yes.
Tottenham are held to a 1-1 draw away to West Ham. Are you just going to blame Ange's set piece defending?
Yeah.
Or will you show a tiny bit of love for David Moyes?
No.
4 straight years in Europe. And he's not getting much love from his own supporters other than Don Hutchinson.
Oh, what a surprise. I'm not a David Moyes fan, as you know. I'm not going to defend him now. Okay, they got points. They defended well, to be fair, to West Ham, which hasn't always been the case this season. From a Spurs point of view, another goal conceded on set pieces. I don't understand.
Particular one is especially bad. Go on YouTube and see it.
It's with the back of Zuma. It's dreadful.
Kurt Zuma is the size of a building.
No,
you can't miss him.
They're clearly not working on it, Gab. Otherwise, they would have improved by now.
Well, there's no offsides on corner kicks for obvious reasons, because the ball comes is it an inch on your right? So you see this large man at the far post by himself. I appreciate you're marking zonally, but surely you either you lower the level of the zone because you understand that if they put a ball in there and the keeper doesn't get it, there's nobody to get it.
It's not the first time, so there's clearly a problem that they can't fix. I don't understand how they don't fix it. I was not happy with Postecoglou's substitutions anyway. I didn't think it made sense whatsoever. And in the end, I thought it was a disappointing performance from the Spurs' point of view. So
it is away against West Ham. It's a London derby. West Ham won the
Arsenal
World Cup.
Arsenal scored 6 goals there. They won 6-0. West Ham are not a good they're not a good team this season.
They won the World Cup.
Spurs are better. Spurs are better than that. And sticking with Spurs, Gabby, Daniel Levy made himself the highest paid chief executive in the Premier League with a package of £6.5 million, which is more than $7 million. And yet he says that the clubs need new investors and more money.
So they're open to more investment.
Yes.
Look, he's a part owner of the club. He can pay himself.
He can do what he wants. Yeah.
What he likes. No, I mean, he owns about what? I think he's got about 30%.
Yeah.
The other guy is 1,000 years old, so yeah. I don't think this is this is an enormous salary if you can look at what executives make in American sports, for example.
In a team that is losing a lot of money,
and a team that built a new stadium
with
and whatever
massive debts.
I don't know, but if they're losing a lot of money, he's losing a lot of money because he owns 30% of the club.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
And the debt is for the stadium. I can kind of live with it, but look. Spurs have been open to new investment for the last 15 years. We all know people who've gone and spoken to Daniel Levy and said, hey, can we do a deal? What can we do here? And what happens? Daniel Levy drives such a hard bargain that they all walk away.
That's true.
That's the reality. Kylian Mbappe misses a first half penalty. Oh, yeah, you're cheering his missed penalty. Nice.
Yeah, but what's next?
But it's all good because his lucky deflection sends Paris Saint-Germain
nothing
past Rennes and into the Coupe de France final. Oh, nothing lucky. He planned it on it hitting the defender.
Sure, sometimes you provoke your luck. That's all I'm saying. He missed the pen. He missed a big chance before that. I thought PSG were very good. And for the first time in 3 years, they go back to the final. Which is not going to be played at the Stade de France this season because of the Olympics, because they're preparing the stadium for the Olympics. So he'll be played in Lille at the
Félix Pollard. No, Pollard is Lens.
That's Lens. And it's
Velodrome? No.
That's Marseille. At the Pierre Mauroy Stadium.
Oh, I was thinking of Velodrome, actually. Isn't that the second biggest stadium in France, the Velodrome? So shouldn't they play it there?
Velodrome is the first.
After the Stade de France.
Yeah.
But of course, you can't play at the Velodrome because you don't want all those Paris Saint-Germain fans going down.
Definitely.
Being inconvenienced.
Yeah, all Lyon fans, even, because the rivalry between Lyon and Marseille, the two Olympicos, is quite strong as well. No fairy tale for Fortuna Düsseldorf, Gabi, Bayer Leverkusen. And go through to the German Cup final with a 4-0 win as Florian Wirtz scores twice, got 14 games unbeaten in all competitions this season.
I'm out of superlatives. There's obviously a reason why Liverpool and Bayern Munich wanted him. I'm happy he's staying. I've written about it. All those people who are saying he already has a deal with Real Madrid. No, he does not already have a deal with Real Madrid. Carlo Ancelotti is a
but it's great news for Real Madrid still.
Might be, but you know what? You weren't here on Monday, but I said, took some stick. I think this is courageous for him. There is no guarantee that they're going to have anything like this season. Next year, if he gets knocked out in the round of 16 of the Champions League against Dinamo Watse, they finish third in the Bundesliga because they have the fourth highest.
Oh. He's going to keep the same squad.
Oh, is he?
100%. I'll tell you, I mean, apart from,
apart from the good players who other teams might go inside,
Jonathan Tah is the only one leaving.
When Florian Wirtz goes and says, I fulfilled my lifelong dream of playing for Al Nasser, we'll see. Your boy, Alexandre Lacazette, scores twice for Olympique Lyonnais in their Coupe de France semi as they roll to a 3-0 win. Jules, there were some questionable refereeing decisions, which left people very unhappy. And it's also relevant because the referee is Stephanie Frappart, who, of course, is a woman.
Yeah.
Referees in the men's league, probably I think by far the most established referee. She's taken over UEFA Super Cups and among the women who, I guess it means that if she can get crucified for this, people, gloves are off, she's being treated exactly the way they treat male referees.
That's the idea. Just on, like I said, 250th goals in his career for club and country. Incredible achievement. What a player. He's having an amazing season after going back to Lyon. And Frappart,
she disallowed that Valenciennes goal.
I mean, she disallowed that one for Anthony Knockaert, the former Leicester and
cheater diving cheat.
That one, in the Premier League. For it's one of those where the player runs behind the defender and then try to go like overtake him, but then like kind of trip him as he does or something like that. And then more than that, I think she gave a penalty that was never a penalty for Lyon, clearly. L'Equipe, who not only do like tough ratings on players and managers, but also on referees this season, they gave her 1 out of 10. And they destroyed her to the point that a lot of people, Jean-Michel Aulas, for example, who's kind of like the defender of women's football in France, was appalled, he said, by that rating.
Jean-Michel Aulas was also a big Lyon fan.
Yeah, no, I know, I presume, but in trying of an objective way. I mean, she should not have, she was terrible.
The simple thing is, would they have given a male referee who had officiated exactly
like
that?
Yeah, it would have been the same.
If the answer is yes,
she doesn't have
anything to prove.
This was back on Monday, but Inter's 2-0 win at home against Empoli sees them go 14 points clear with 8 games to go. Yeah, they could write this up, as in the title, in the derby on April 22nd.
That's right. It's kind of a race between them and Leverkusen, you know, who's going to win the title first. Di Marco early, that man again, and Alexis Sanchez late. Yeah, they could, and it would be sweet for them. It would be deserved, but... I think Leverkusen are going to do it before him,
but I
don't know. Brentford and Brighton battle to a 0-0 draw, but Jules, one of the big talking points is that for the first time in 7 months in the Premier League, a referee, in this case Andy Madley, was called to an on-field review by VAR Michael Oliver, and he did not change his mind as a result of the review.
Yeah.
Key point was the tussle between Lewis Dunk and Johan Wiese.
And he was right. I thought I feared for the worst, because for me watching the game, clearly the first foul was on Dunk on Wiese, and then Wiese kind of retaliated and committed the foul himself, but the first one is 100% right. Dunk on Wiese. So I was like, why are you calling him to see the screen? Then he went to see the screen, and I think you could see with his face that he was standing his ground quite well, and then I knew that he was not gonna...
It's really funny here, I think, because here we're seeing PR in action in live action, right? I think we both really like Howard Webb. I really like Howard Webb. I support what he's trying to do. I think it's really difficult this season, right?
Yeah.
But basically, the VAR people have a thing where they get on the phone with people who cover referees and broadcasters and stuff like that, kind of in real time, right? So the fact that VAR is Michael Oliver, one of the top two referees in England, calls a younger referee like Andy Madley over, and this happens. They went out of their way to say, well, Oliver just wanted to show him that there were two fouls and stuff like that. And what did he want to do? And so, well, no, nothing wrong with Michael Oliver calling him over. And I'm like, dude, you're not here to, you keep telling us, you're not re-refereeing.
Yeah.
If he had the right outcome, did Oliver, no, I'm sorry, you have to, rather than, because all these VARites started saying, oh, no, PGMOL, Oliver was right calling him over. No, he got the right call, right?
He interrupted the game for no reason.
For no reason.
Because it was the right call.
You know, unless the only thing would be if Oliver's on the audio to Madley say, hey, did you see that? Oliver's like, did you see the Dunk Wiese incident? Did you just see it again?
Case, yeah.
And Madley says something like, oh, what Dunk Wiese incident? I know nothing about this. Then fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Assuming that didn't happen.
Well, you're right. It might have happened.
Let it go.
Yeah, let it go, for sure. And sticking with Brighton, Gab, they announced profit of some £122 million, which is more than $150 million, which is a record for a Premier League club. Is that why Roberto De Zerbi, the manager, obviously seems so non-committal over his future and saying that he wants to know the plan of the squad and the plan of the team and the club and the owner and maybe to see that money being reinvested?
Well, I think... I mean, we're outing ourselves. We're big fans of the Zerbi's work.
Yeah.
I find him very likable. I did not like some of the stuff that's been coming out of him, right? Fine, you want to complain about injuries and stuff like that. Just stop going on about the project and the investment and stuff like that. You know what Brighton is. You knew what
the
outlook at Brighton was when it came over. You also, you know, read the room. If you've ever met Tony Bloom, we've both met him, right?
Yeah.
There's a reason they call that guy the Lizard, right? He's not emotional. You're not going to pressure Tony Bloom into doing... And he cares more about Brighton than you do.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So this serves you no purpose, right? You know...
But it's because he wants to leave, right? Otherwise, he wants to leave.
He can leave. They're, I'm sure there's a clause, and they're not going to keep him against his will. They'll pay up like they paid up for Potter and so on. And by the way, regarding Tony Bloom, they used some of this profit to pay down the loan. He put his own money into the club. Yeah. He loaned the club money interest-free. a club still owing £373 million after he took some of that money, about £30 million, to pay that down. So I think they have a right now to kind of stabilize the club. Eric Ten Hag, speaking ahead of the Chelsea-Manchester United game, which kicks off in a few hours, says that getting rid of him would, quote, interrupt the process, unquote. Jules, he sounds like Sam Hinkie. NBA fans will know what I mean.
Sixers, and I mean, we're going to talk about Hinkie a bit later. What process? Why are we interrupting here? There is no process. Nothing. There's nothing happening in this team this season. Last season was something. The process has been interrupted a long time ago, in my view.
Well, maybe the process where you have Kobbie Mainoo and Alejandro Garnacho and Rasmus Højlund, all of whom make it into Tor Christian Carlsen's 39 players to watch under the age of 21.
Is that the process?
That's the process.
Good luck with the process.
Eric Ten Hag created.
Yeah, you know what? He's going to finish like Hinkie. Out of the door. Out of the door.
Wait, but Hinkie told Sixers fans to trust the process. And they went on and they won multiple NBA. No, they didn't.
Sorry. No, they didn't. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yeah, thank you. The sticking with United, Gab, Mark Ogden reports that they've hired a company called Interpath to review their spending, and that several senior figures have had their corporate credit cards frozen. So that credit cards where you basically borrow them, you pay for your expenses directly with a card that is...
Yeah, it's essentially your corporate expense account that you might use for clients and stuff like that. So this is something that's been rumbling. Even before Ratcliffe took over the club, you know, there were all these leaked stories, presumably from Ratcliffe, talking about like, oh, but United have so much staff, this club is so bloated, why do all these guys so much money? I know at least three people who are either at United now or have interviewed for jobs at United the last 5 years, who've been at other clubs, not on the sporting sides, on the commercial side or whatever else, or the logistics side. That might have given it away, but whatever. And they point out that United just pays a lot more than the
in
other
wages,
clubs that they were at. Yeah, in wages for
everything.
Yeah, there's a sense of loyalty there. There's people who've been there a long time. And look, you're running a business, you want to cut back on this, and maybe so you can put it towards your playing staff, fair enough. What I will say is that this is also kind of cosmetic because, you know, when you run a football club, 70%, 80%, sometimes more of your expenses go on paying the players. So it's not going to be, you know, George, who's the sales associate for Southeast Asia, Manchester United, taking away his corporate card or questioning his expenses. That's not going to move the needle and create more money for you so that you can go and sign another center back, right? That's not, it does give a bigger sense of discipline, I guess, at the club. But I mean, I don't know if you let Interpath talk about wasted money on the playing side, because that's a whole other issue. That is, if they're not happy where they are financially, that is where the money was wasted.
Yeah.
No fairy tale for Saarbrücken, Jules. I'm asking you because, of course, Saarbrücken are nearly French.
Of course.
It's just unlucky that the path the river took, unlucky for them.
Yeah.
So they had to be German instead.
Yeah.
But fallen Giants Kaiserslautern in the German Cup Finals, a neat story too.
Yeah, I mean, after all the miracles that Saarbrücken did to get that far to the semi-final, knocking out Bayern, of course, and Frankfurt
and Gladbach
as well. This was just a step to, although this was the weakest team of all of the ones we mentioned, because Kaiserslautern are in the second division. It's a massive derby, of course. There's only, I think, 70 kilometers between the two cities.
800 cops at this.
Yeah, it was, which, I think, high risk. And in the end, I mean, two blunders by the Saarbrücken goalkeeper. And the first one especially, terrible goalkeeping. That cost them their place in the final.
Some bad misses from the striker too, Kai, whatever his name is, the guy with the hair.
A stunning goal from Rolando Madragora gives Fiorentina a 1-0 win over Atalanta in the Coppa Italia semi-final first leg. We said Juventus won the other first leg. Gab is still all in the balance.
It's still in the balance because of a young man who is the Atalanta goalkeeper, former
Fiorentina 21. Really well.
Carnesecchi made some absolutely tremendous saves. This is really entertaining. Fiorentina are just so much fun to watch. They get it right, they get it wrong. Doesn't matter. Vincenzo Italiano plays, I think this has got to be one of the most attacking sides that you'll see in Europe. Mandragora, lovely goal. Yeah, check it out on YouTube. He is a typical kind of number 10 type attacking midfielder who does stuff like this occasionally, and it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Rafael Varane spoke about concussions and head injuries and football and his kids. He had a lot to say, Jules.
So, I mean, This was great, I think, the interview that he gave, because I think, to start with the misconception, I think a lot of people think that concussion only comes where clashes of head happen, so, or you get punched in the face, for example, something like that. In his case, he says that it was just purely being hit in the head with the ball or heading the ball. And he said that his three worst games in his career, one with France at the 2014 World Cup against Germany in the quarterfinal, and two with Real Madrid in the Champions League, well, one in the Champions League, especially against City, where happened as he was concussed but didn't know about it. So the game before, a few days before, he was hit in the head by the ball. So either a cross, he said one of them, the cross, and he hit it with the, I don't know how you said the, I mean, his, that side of his face. And then after that, he felt really tired. There was something wrong with his eye. He just thought that this was just a, just the physical side of being involved in the game, and late in the season, you're tired, you've played so many games. So he played, but really not being himself. And he said, like, it's not an excuse for me not being good in that, in those games. It's just the fact that those three games where I was bad came out just after I was clearly concussed. And now he wants the conversation to be, to be, to open up, for people to be able to talk about it. He thinks that the concussion
protocol
is BS, basically.
Biased.
No, like BS.
Oh, BS.
Like, yeah,
sorry.
Rubbish. In the sense that, well, in 3 minutes, you just decide, follow my finger, how many fingers, what's your name, where do you live, and that's it.
Not just that, but it's a club employee.
Yeah, as well. Yeah, we've said that many times. So I thought it was great, whether you, you know.
Yeah, we worked with Taylor Twellman, of course, got very strong thoughts on this, understandably so.
Yeah, Chris Sutton as well is lobbying for no more headers. And just to finish before you go, Gab, because I forgot, but Varane said that one of his children plays football, and Rafa says to his son, don't head the ball. I don't care. Don't let it bounce, but boot it, hit it, try to control it. Just don't head it.
It's an interesting one. There's actually been suggestions to minimize this, because one of the arguments is that it's the cumulative effect of heading the ball. Some people say that maybe in youth football, some places they've banned headers. Others saying, what if we, I've got a friend who's made the suggestion about, what if we only allowed headers inside the penalty area?
In the box.
The idea being that there would be a lot fewer in the course of a game.
Yeah.
You would still get the excitement of headed goals and stuff like that, but elsewhere. And like, the more I think about it, I kind of think to myself, gee, I don't think I've ever seen a header outside the penalty box or say, whoa, what a tremendous header.
Yeah,
boy,
no,
this really is really adding to my
clearances, yeah.
Not just that, but a lot of times the defensive clearances where the ball travels a lot, comes down a lot. So
on the goal kick. Or,
it's going to be much more of a burden on the head.
Yeah. Saúl scores late to give Atletico Madrid a 2-1 win away to Villarreal. That was on Monday night as well. That was big.
It was big. So nice to see Axel Witsel score in that game too, isn't it? Look, when Saúl's good, he's really good. He's kind of like a smaller, more
strange career, isn't
Joao Felix. Yeah, it's bizarre. But this was really big because it means they stay 2 points clear of Atletico Bilbao in that race for top four. Jules, I'm a Marco Silva guy, but I was left befuddled when he made three changes after just half an hour, taking off Alex Iwobi, Sasa Lukic, and Harry Wilson in the defeat against Forest. This is kind of performative. Brings to mind another West London-based Portuguese manager.
But never three. I don't think even Jose never did three after 30 minutes. No, I don't think I've ever seen. I tried to look for it in all the leagues, everywhere. I can't find one early serve. I found a game with two, but never three. I mean, now that it's easy because you have five subs.
Right.
And for many years, you had only three, so you were never going to do three after half an hour. So I understand it's different. But I was watching that game. They were 2-0 down. They were horrific, Fulham. And you could see him he was standing up on the touchline. You could see his face. It was like, uh-oh, he's not happy at all. I don't know. If you think that it's not working, I think if you want to, I mean, it's brutal for the three guys who came
up,
and you see Harry Wilson's face.
And I guarantee you this, Jules, if they weren't mid-table, and look, they're mid-table, they're not going to go down,
they're safe.
And it's a credit to him, so he's got a right to do this. If they weren't mid-table, if they were playing for something, I don't think he would have done this.
But what
would have
do
done
do
this
then?
Because
when your team is so bad. Your team needed something
shout at them at halftime like a normal coach does. It's not like they were. It's not like they went into halftime 10-0 down.
I mean, to be fair, they conceded third after he made the three.
Yeah, exactly.
10 minutes later, they conceded third. So, I don't know. I'm for it. You're the manager. You know your boys. They're your dressing room. You know what needs to be done. But I agree with you. It's brutal. It's humiliating. If you're one of the three, it's really, and not everybody can take it. I think either. The Spanish FA have punished Getafe with a three-match partial partial stadium closure for the racial and xenophobic abuse directed at the Sevilla manager Quique Sanchez Flores and the defender Marcos Acuña on Saturday in the La Liga game. Does that make sense to you?
So obviously, in case you missed it, Quique Sanchez Flores and Marcos Acuña do not identify, as far as we know, as people of color, right? So this is a different category it goes in. And Quique Sanchez Flores, he is of Roma, or some call it gypsy, descent. He's very proud of it, very well known. Lola Flores is, I think, his aunt or something, very famous. And he says, look, I'm proud of my identity, but if you weaponize it to insult me, that's not on. And this is xenophobic, and the Roma community I've suffered discrimination for many years, not just in Spain, but throughout Europe. This is not acceptable. So I have no issue with this. The Marcos Acuña business is slightly different. Marcos Acuña was insulted because they called him a monkey.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what Marcos Acuña's ethnic background is. I'm not 100%. This is a situation, and it goes to something, I think, broader about intolerance, because Martin Keown, who we've both worked with, got this all the time, right? Keown's got a monkey's head.
Yeah.
He's not the only one, right? And Martin Keown is, I believe he's of English and Irish descent. The man is Caucasian, identifies as Caucasian, right? If we're going to treat this, if we're going to crack down on this, we just have to make sure that we are consistent going forward. If they've established this benchmark, I don't think this needs to be classed in the same category as racism directed towards a black person, because I think it trivializes it. I just want consistency. I want consistent rules. Yeah. And so hopefully they're going to stick with this. I don't think a partial stadium coach, they also have to put up a sign saying that they condemn violent, racist, xenophobic, and intolerant acts. Great, do that.
Yeah.
But if this happens again, you're going to need to act on it.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we need to keep talking about this stuff. Rayo Majada Honda goalkeeper Sheikh Saad was banned for 2 games after confronting a fan of Sestao River, who he said was racially abusing him in a third division game this past weekend. In addition, Rayo forfeited the game and were deducted 3 points after his teammates walked off the pitch in solidarity and refused to continue. Jules, this to me feels like all kinds of wrong.
Yeah, and I think this is why, again, racism in Spain, we will never make progress. It will never stop. It will never get better for Vini, for Sar, for Quique Sanchez Flores, we talked about it, for Acuña, for all those people who get racially abused there. Because of that, how can Sheikh Sar be suspended when he just literally turned around? He'd been so. I mean, one of the tribunals said that the racism abused started earlier in the game than when he retaliated. When he reacted, and that he should have said to the referee the first time that he heard it at the beginning of the game that it was happening, not wait that long before telling the referee and then obviously reacting the way he did, which is really like bonkers and just blows my mind. Rayo did the right thing to not wanting to continue that game. The players in solidarity did the right thing. You want to encourage them to continue, but things, sanctions like that won't help the cause, because players then we think, you know, we are at the bottom of the table, or we're fighting for something. Should we walk off? But then we would lose the game. We would be dog points. We would do this. We would do that. This is so wrong. I just cannot believe it, man. For me, this is at the heart of the problem.
This looks like somebody kind of hiding behind like a very strict literal interpretation of the rules. I think what Sheikh Sarr did that was wrong was going physically into the stands.
Yeah, but you
do not need to do that. This is dangerous. You could create a confrontation. There could be innocent people there who can't do that, right? Everything else he did, I have no issue with. Well done his teammates for supporting him, going off the pitch. I see no reason, frankly, why they should forfeit the game and get a 3-point penalty. This just seems somebody passing the buck and saying, oh no, I'm just going to go by the laws. And then later, if somebody else wants to overturn this, that's fine. Hopefully it gets looked at. The fan, incidentally, who Sar said was racially abusing him, has pressed charges against him, and Sestao River deny that there was any racial abuse going on.
Of course they do. Also, back on Monday, Roma grabbed a scoreless draw at Lecce when they were under pressure for most of the game, which means they're still on track for a place in the Champions League.
Yeah, they still have a ton of the ball, trying to play pretty football. Not always as productive offensively, as it, of course, it finished 0-0, but they're there. They're in fifth place. Jules, we all remember the Trabzonspor pitch invasion at the end of the game against Fenerbahce when visiting players were assaulted and Bright Osai Samuel went into berserker mode. The punishments have been handed out, and it hasn't been pretty.
No. So the the biggest one, or sorry, the main one, I would say, is that Trabzonspor would have to play 6 games behind closed doors, so the full stadium closed, which they were really not happy with, which after the scenes that we saw, I'm struggling to understand how, what they think is too much, where they would be happy with 3, with 4, with nothing.
They obviously one, think two. It's too much given yeah. that what they wrote on social
they
media.
They wrote on social media to F your justice and resign for the board of the like discipline committee of the Turkish FA, which in itself is a disgusting response to those disgusting scenes. To be fair, we thought that Osayi Samuel and Mishiba tried to some extent, who also high-kick one of the Trabzonspor fans on the pitch, would get in trouble, but they didn't. So I'm not really sure. And on the other hand, you had two Fenerbahce players, Egri Bayat and Osterwolde, who got a one-man ban.
Yeah, a one-game ban, yeah.
Yeah, for fighting some of the fans. But then some other players as well were hit by missiles.
Livakovic, Dzeko and Tadic were hit by missiles from the crowd. Look,
it's just crazy.
Honestly, if I were Trabzonspor, maybe they have more information than I do, but based on what we have seen, I would be uncorking the champagne if I happen to drink, or non-alcoholic champagne if I don't drink. This is ridiculous. 6 games in a mat for behind closed doors for a pitch invasion that your stewards and your police were not able to control when your fans hit them with, hit people with missiles.
I know. The Fenerbahce, everything.
Fenerbahce threatening to withdraw from the league, is a little bit hysterical.
Yeah, we knew they wouldn't do that anyway.
But obviously they're going to revise the situation. Maybe they can go and join La Porta Super League.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Napoli and Juventus are swapping front offices. Personal, Gab.
Yeah, that's right. So Giuntoli, of course, was the Napoli director of football. He moved to Juventus last summer. He's taking two of his trusted assistants, Giuseppe Pompilio and Stefano Stefanelli. The latter is now at Pisa. To Juventus, the guy who was at Juve, Giovanni Manes, going to Napoli. I have a piece up on the website saying how difficult it is to actually judge what the director of football is. We'll agree, super important. Yeah. It's so hard to judge from the outside. One of the things about Giuntoli, people always tell me, oh yeah, he's a really good administrator, he's a nice guy, but in terms of talent spotting and negotiating, he has these super talented assistants. I don't know if this guy Pompilio and Stefanelli are his super talented assistants, and so he needs them to work.
Yeah,
I don't
maybe.
Know. I just know, viewed from the outside, whether it's this, whether it's Dan Ashworth, it's so hard to tell.
It is hard.
All sorts of stupid in this next one, Jules. I don't know what it is. It's a time of year.
This week, yeah.
Chelsea had to issue a statement after a video of Conor Gallagher apparently snubbing a mascot went viral, and he was accused of racism.
Yeah, you see at the weekend before the Burnley game in the tunnel, the tunnel cam, he's the captain, and all the little boys are the mascots, and he comes to the front of the tunnel, and then there's this little boy, mixed race boy, at the start, at the front of the line, if you want, who is waiting for high-fiving Conor Gallagher, who doesn't see him clearly. Otherwise, I would think he would have.
Or he chooses to make a statement, and he sees him, chooses him to make a statement about race. No, of course not. Come on.
And then obviously all the reaction directed at Conor Gallagher on his social media, especially his Twitter account, his Instagram account, all of that, calling him a racist and all sorts, to the point that Chelsea had to release a statement yesterday on Wednesday to condemn all the abuse towards Conor Gallagher. I mean, the fact that they have to do that, that they have to release a statement, is already like ridiculous.
And when you see the whole video, incidentally, it's not like he's ignoring the boy. He's like, he's got his hand on his shoulder as they walk out.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
He's like talking to him. So like all this stuff is very visible. It's absurd.
This is mad. More war for Ajax. They suspended their CEO, Alex Kroos, after learning that he had bought more than 17,000 Ajax shares just before they announced his appointment as the CEO last August.
So full disclosure here, I do have a bias because he is the cousin of somebody I went to school with. But he says he's innocent. He says he bought those shares between April 2022 and July 2023. When he wasn't sure he'd be the Ajax CEO.
Yeah.
Yeah, equally, you kind of know Ajax will appoint a CEO, and so the value of the shares will go up.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not a great look. You also know, presumably, it's not like they called him up in August and say, "Hey, Alex, you want the job?"
Yeah, he running before.
Presumably, for sure. But anyway, he made his money. He founded the sports agency SEG, which, of course, is where Nigel Ten Hag works.
Yes, son of. And
they represent son of the other Ten Hag. It's not a great look for the club. Club are having an investigation.
If you look at Ajax season, you can't make it up. Well, everything.
Michael van Praag was really, really hard on him.
Yeah.
And the Ajax values. And yeah, this is Ajax's annus horribilis. Jules, let's take another dip in the wonderful world of John Textor.
JT.
Now, hey, look, John Textor, well done. Leon in the Coupe de France final. Yeah.
Amazing.
But now we got to put the boot in. Botafogo, which is the Brazilian club he owns, they have appointed Braga coach Arthur Jorge,
not the
passed away, but another guy named Arthur Jorge, because in Portugal they run out of names pretty quickly. Now, this has left the Portuguese club furious, as they're fourth in the table. They're 2 points from third place with 7 games to go.
Yeah.
I you know what? I appreciate different season starts at different time, and you want Arthur Jorge for...
I know.
But... this isn't classy. It's not classy from this guy, Arthur Jorge, either.
Botafogo paid €2 million to Braga, which I guess is a small compensation. I mean, it's a compensation. It's still a lot of money, I guess. But you're right. It's not classy from Botafogo. I mean, from Arthur Jorge's point of view, though, I think the lack of loyalty here is baffling. It's really disgusting, I think. Finish the season. Come on. And you said to Botafogo, if you really want me, you're going to wait until May, and I come straight away. I don't take any holidays. I can even maybe start working on it now.
Yeah. You work something out.
Come on. What, you really need to go now?
Unless Arthur Jorge somehow fell out with the club. I mean, they're
having a great season, man. They were good in the Champions League. They played good football. They're good in the league. They're fun to watch. They've got good youngsters, everything.
You know what? And a guy who behaves like this, JT, John Textor, if he does well at Botafogo, he's going to screw you over. No, honestly, it's very likely. No, because you know what? If you're Judas like this, it's very likely that he will screw you over. So Botafogo do well, and then all of a sudden they get a call from Crystal Palace, who've just... Oh, not you. That's still your club. From one of the clubs that you don't have a minority shareholding in.
Yeah.
Maybe they get a call from Burnley after Victor Kompany moves on to replace Pep at Manchester City.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden... Oh, look. Oh, we were about to win the Brazilian Real. Okay, bye-bye. I'm going to Burnley.
I know.
No, seriously.
No, it's fine. And more JT, more John Textor, Gab. He will go on trial on April 15th before a disciplinary panel of the Superior Court of Sport for Football in Brazil.
Yeah.
That's to court because he called everybody corrupt, right?
Yeah. So just to explain this, right? Botafogo, last season, they had, I think, a 13-point lead.
Yeah.
They frittered the lead away. He accused basically everybody of being corrupt, and he said he had evidence.
Did you remember after that defeat against Palmeiras when he came on the pitch and spoke to...
Yeah, sort of shouting like a maniac. Yeah.
In English.
Yeah. Anyway, so the evidence he has of match fixing, he said he had recordings of referees talking about... By the way, a lot of this stuff is on his own website, which is called johntexter.org. It's the gift that keeps on giving. You can see him in front of the camera talking. Anyway, his evidence stems from, he says he has these recordings, but he won't hand them over.
Of course he won't.
And he also says that he commissioned, and we've told you, the company is either BetRadar or something like that, because there are companies that do this. They look at strange betting patterns.
Yeah.
He says, because he likes to obfuscate everything and make it seem more complicated than it is, which it's not that complicated. He says he has an AI company that looked at suspicious movements in the betting lines. But he can't disclose that evidence, which company it is, what their evidence is, which shows that these matches were potentially fixed. And now, because he won't bring this information forward, you know, he's going to go on trial. I think the biggest punishment he faces is a $40,000 fine, which I'm assuming is not a lot of money.
Well, yeah.
He's not going to pay it. Botafogo is going to pay it. And a 360-day suspension. But given he doesn't actually play or coach... And he's got all these other teams that he can go to. He can go to Molenbeek and hang out there if he wants.
Yeah, if he wants to.
It doesn't really affect him. What does a suspension from an owner actually mean? Nothing, right?
That's true.
So, yeah. The Palmeiras president, Leila Pereira, had called him unbalanced or unhinged at the time. I think a lot of people might feel that way.
Yeah, maybe.
Opta's ELO ranking of the world's best leagues is out, Jules. Couple of surprises in there, no? The top five, pretty much, as you'd expect.
Yeah, the top five. Maybe you disagree on the order. So Premier League is first, then La Liga, then Serie A, Bundesliga in fourth, and Liga in fifth. So they're the big five leagues.
Nobody's going to disagree with that, except for Derek Ray and some
of
the
fanatics. No, but you could go. Would you go a bit higher up? I mean, La Liga, is La Liga that good this season?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. Compared to the others, I'm not so sure. But anyway, it makes sense.
Then it gets funky after that.
It gets funky after that, because then in sixth is the Belgian Pro League. I mean, I'm not sure if people are Opta or Elo even. I've watched the Belgian league. I have. I can tell you that it's not that great. Portugal is seventh. Denmark is eighth.
Which is an eye-opener.
That is a massive... I don't know where they were last season, but eighth, ahead of the Brasileiro and ahead of MLS. No Eredivisie there.
Saudi Pro League?
No Saudi Pro League. Hey, Cristiano, I thought the Saudi Pro League was already ahead of...
I don't think Cristiano likes Opta's ELO.
No, neither.
No Argentine League?
No Argentine League either.
There's somebody else good who we're forgetting. No Liga MX.
No Liga MX, no. No, even if Denmark is there...
I mean, yeah, I don't know about this. This was presented as like, look, MLS are great. They're in 10th place.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but you're in 10th place in a league that has Denmark at 8th place.
I know. I didn't look at the criteria. I'm not, to be honest, I don't know what the criteria is.
ELO, often they extrapolate from when teams in interleague play each other, and this might be one of the other reasons. So basically, and this is going to penalize, for example, teams in Saudi, because they're going to play in the Asian Champions League, they're going to play other teams in Asia.
Right.
And their leagues aren't ranked very high.
Yeah.
So they're not going to get a lot of points, even if they do beat them. MLS plays at least Liga MX, who presumably was higher last year. Maybe they could result against them. Denmark, I don't know. Copenhagen, did somebody else do well? I don't
think so.
I don't know.
It's interesting. We love our list and rankings today, Gab, because Liga, we've got the one for attendances this season so far, and Liga are still fifth. Okay, but they had the sharpest rise in their attendances among the big five leagues, plus 13%, which is very good. They're almost closing down on La Liga.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, they're not too far.
All right, the top five is Bundesliga, 39,000 and change. Premier League just behind them, 38,421. Serie A passing the 30,000 mark, 30,913. Liga 29,170. And Liga 1, as you said, 26,872. This is all pretty fugazi. This is all kind of stupid. The reason it's stupid is that, hey, look, it kind of depends on the size of your stadium.
No, I know.
And who gets promoted. So if you're in the Premier League...
I can guarantee you if Clermont had an 80,000-seater stadium, they would not feel it.
No, but if instead of teams like Luton and Bournemouth with their teeny, tiny shoebox stadiums, they weren't in the Premier League, and they're in the Premier League on merit, but if instead of those teams, you had Leeds, you had Sheffield Wednesday, whatever, then the Premier League would pass the Bundesliga. So it's... kind of stupid, but then if Hamburg were in the Bundesliga, they'd have 60,000. Oh, look, you know, I do think the trend is a good one, because it just shows you that more people are, especially in, you know, let's face it, in France and in Italy, where the attendances had been down, people are going, people are into it. Before Barcelona fans jump all over me, yes, La Liga is also down because Barcelona have to play Montjuic rather than at the Camp Nou. We to keep the Cristiano fanboys happy, Jules. Another hat trick for him in the 8-0 away win for Al Nasser against I don't even know if it's El Abha or just Abha. Maybe just
Abha. Which is not Abha, or even Abha if you want, which is not a music band. It's actually a real football team, not very good. I think I could probably still play for them. In the first half only, Cristiano had a hat trick with two free kicks and two assists. They were 5-0 up at half time. I think it's two hat trick in the space of 4 days, maybe.
That's right.
Yeah, so 42 goals in 41 games.
Age 39, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's not bad.
Well done to him. Adidas, who's still producing for now, Germany's official national team jersey, have banned fans from personalizing it with the number 44, Gab. Why?
The numbers are stylized. The font is stylized. And the two fours look like the Waffen-SS symbol. Mm. How nobody kind of realized this is kind of weird. I don't know if there was an uptick in people ordering shirts with the number 40. I don't know what kind of weirdo... Well, unless you're German and you order Germany national team shirt, you're a weirdo. On top of that, if you order a German national team shirt with a number 44, you're either a weirdo or you like the fact that the two fours
guess.
Look
exactly.
like that.
Yeah, so, I think so,
look, it's a sensitive subject. Good that they did this. I think it's reasonable. It's not going to stop people from who are determined to do this from affixing their own logos or whatever to the shirt. There's nothing you can do about that. Jules, this brings us to an end. But we got to come back.
Yes,
that's
Monday.
Right. Some huge, huge games this weekend. So we're going to be back on Monday. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.